Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:03 PM, that is Pacific Summer Time, and today is November 5th. Well, it was a day of dynamics, and I thought we'd kick off with one of the largest, which was on Bitcoin. It was up over $1,100 and clearly pushing through the 14,000 level and pushing on to new recovery highs. I think that the most instructive chart that we have out there is the log scale, because the vast majority of people engaging with Bitcoin are unleveraged, and that means they're looking more at percentage gains than points, because points would be much more indicative of leveraged traders. And what I find particularly interesting is the fact that it had come back to the region of the 1,000-day moving average back in 2018 and again in 2020. And this has been an almost 3-year consolidation. The last time we had such a lengthy consolidation, it also came back into the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And the period of time that it went sideways for was from about 2013, and it was late in the year, all the way through to early 2017. So we had approximately just over 3 years of consolidation. Then the peak in 2017 was also right at the end of the year, and it went sideways for almost 3 years, and it hasn't quite broken out yet. So the next area of potential resistance is going to be around 20,000. But I think the one thing that the bulls are going to be very conscious of is the fact that Bitcoin has, the last time it broke on the upside, it went up 20 times. And when we think about what the potential is for prices at the moment, well, if it were to go up 20 times, we're thinking, then they're obviously starting to predict that prices could go as high as 200,000. Well, that's an extraordinary gain by any stretch of the imagination. But the other point, of course, is that it does not have to go that far. And we haven't seen moves like that in any other asset class, so there's nothing else that we can compare it to except its own history. And its own history is full of examples of those kinds of moves. So that is obviously one of the reasons why people are becoming progressively more engaged with the cryptocurrency sector. I've seen examples over the last 24 hours on more than one occasion of fraudulent activity, and where websites have popped up trying to encourage people to spend their money and to try and buy fraudulent ways or fraudulent, I guess I'm lost for words, but it, certainly there were websites trying to get people to click in to put in their credit card details to buy fraudulent cryptocurrencies, and then they were being robbed. Well, then when one is participating in this particular market, then you certainly need to think about how to buy it effectively and how to buy it in a secure manner. And then, of course, there's the question of whether one wants to do it oneself and take the risks and the complication of doing it via a just buying it outright, trying to save the encryption key onto a USB device and keep that safe, or to go through an exchange and take the risk of having the exchange raided. I do have seen on Robinhood that they now offer the ability to buy cryptocurrencies, but they've just had their own hacking incident where they've lost the details of people. So that doesn't appear to be particularly secure. And then when we think about the fact that Fidelity is offering custody services, that should be more secure, at least it would be insured. But then I haven't seen anyone talk about what kind of fees they're charging for that kind of service. But as I said, this was a day of upward dynamics. And gold has also rallied rather impressively here. It has now clearly broken the downward bias over the course of the last few months. So this is at least confirming near-term support in the region of anywhere between $1,850 to $1,900. And when we look at this on a weekly basis, then it also clearly stands out. This is an impressive upward dynamic, and it does suggest that the period of consolidation is nearing an end. Silver prices were also positive in here today, up well in excess of a dollar and pushing back up to the upper side of the range and closing above the psychological $25 level. We didn't have quite the same dynamic moves in either platinum or palladium. Platinum has closed back in the region of $900 but hasn't been able to push through it. Palladium was off its highs, but it's at least firming from the region of the trend mean. Rhodium has been a metal that is in really rather limited supply, and the share price of the ETF, the physical ETF, is firming now from the $1,000 level, which is right in the region of the peaks from back in February, March, and it's been by far the best performer of the semi-precious metals. But then when we look at the industrial metals as well, well, aluminium, for example, has pushed on to new recovery highs, and it's clearly broken the downtrend from that peak in early 2018. So we're certainly seeing more activity in the commodities sector. Then when we look at soft commodities, soybeans has been resurgent and pulling away from the 1,000-cent level. So this is really rather impressive action as well. But I thought it was particularly interesting the commonality that we're seeing right across the international equities sector, because it's not simply that Wall Street is reacting to the potential for additional stimulative action. And the fact that there is a divided government, or at least quite likely to be a divided government in the USA, does enhance the potential that there will be fewer laws enacted to try and combat the dominance of the market by the tech sector, or the healthcare sector by insurance companies. Anything that people were worried about is less likely to be less of an issue when you've got divided government, and yet there is likely to be continued stimulative action. When we then think about the 10-year yield, it pulled back in a very dynamic manner yesterday, and it's been relatively steady in here today. This is likely to be the catalyst for additional action by the Federal Reserve. They're quite likely to wait until they have clarity on what the political makeup of the country is likely to be. But the market is moving on from that already and pricing in the clear potential for significant additional stimulative action. Now, if we just simply then just start off in Asia and look at the yen, for example, it has strengthened through 104. Now, it doesn't generally tend to spend an awful lot of time stronger than 104. So now the big question is, well, what is the Bank of Japan going to do about it? Are they going to intervene to devalue the currency, which would, of course, mean printing more of it? The Nikkei is beginning to price in that potential, and it was up in a dynamic manner today, and now right in the region of the upper side of the range, which has persisted for most of the last 3 years. Upside follow through the balance of the week, which is really only one day, would signal that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. But the long-term chart is where we can see an idea of what the potential is. Because the Nikkei has been forming this range, a first step above the base, for 3 years, and it's the completion of a phenomenally long bear market. And there is the clear potential that before people even begin to think about the market being expensive, it will be well in excess of the peaks. Then when we look at a number of indices in Europe, They have been ranging now for most of the last 5 months, and they're coming back up towards the upper side of the range. The UK has got a valuation advantage relative to Europe, and Europe has got a valuation advantage relative to the USA. Obviously, the question about the outlook for Brexit and what it's all going to mean for the UK has been the deciding factor in the valuation discount for that market. But that question is likely to be answered before the end of the year, and ranges are explosions waiting to happen. Well, with this anticipation of additional weakness in the US dollar, and it was down in a dynamic manner in here today, then it's not just weakness against the euro or the yen, but just about every other currency as well. If we look at some of the weakest currencies around, well, the Brazilian real has certainly been one of those, but it has rallied in a reasonably dynamic manner from the region of its lows. Then, when we think about how are the Latin American sectors doing on a stock market basis, well, we can look at an investment trust, and the price is right in the region of the lows from over the last 5 years, and still at a very depressed level relative to where the peaks were. If we just simply zoom in, it was well off the lows in here today. This particular investment trust is about 60% in Brazil and the balance in Mexico. And when we look at the Mexico ETF, well, it is likely to be one of the countries that benefits from reshoring to the US, and it's firming from the region of the trend mean. But part of the performance that it's getting is certainly from the currency, and the currency has strengthened through the 200-day moving average in a dynamic fashion. It's rallied really quite impressively this week. Now, it could potentially encounter resistance around 20, but if it can strengthen through that level, well, then we're back in a demand-dominated environment. When we look at some of the energy producers, like the Russian ruble, it has also steadied in the region of its lows and that psychological 80 ruble level. Then, when we look at some of the Russian ETFs, they have continued to do reasonably well. Thought that the performance on the Xtrackers, one listed in the UK, was particularly interesting today because it has a very clear weekly upside key reversal. So we're also seeing evidence of higher reaction lows for some of these markets. And I think what's interesting about Russia is that it had been doing so well from the lows back in 2016, despite the geopolitical risk attached to it. And I thought that was one of the interesting things that was being commented about with Brazil, that it had the risk of geopolitical tensions with a Biden administration, but it certainly didn't hold back Russia. When we then think about the Australian dollar, well, it has been outperforming other commodity producers for a while now, and it has been up in a dynamic manner over the course of this week and firming, at least confirming near-term support in the region of the 70 cent level. When we then think about the performance of the stock market, not so much in local terms, but from the perspective of an international investor, it is firming in a dynamic manner from the region of the trend mean. But I think the most important thing is that Australia, from an international perspective, has been doing nothing for the last 12 years. And that has, I think that's a graphic illustration of just how much the devaluation of the Aussie dollar has affected the performance of the market from an international perspective. So if the Aussie dollar has now broken its downtrend, which looks increasingly likely, then there is the clear scope for the market to return to outperformance. So we're certainly seeing a great deal of commonality in the commodities sector, and the continuous commodity index was up about 1% in here today and extending its rebound from the 400 level. when we think about the challenges, for example, that the South African market has, the currency has now strengthened through 16. It's at a new recovery high, and it's coming back into the first area of potential resistance around the upper side of that range that persisted for most of the end of 2018 and all of 2019. So we're at a rather interesting level for a lot of these currencies that they have rallied. Now they're at the first area of potential resistance, so we may get a little consolidation. But investors are increasingly positioning themselves for the clear potential that 2021 is going to be about global reflation. Because it isn't simply that the USA is putting some of the uncertainty behind it and that it's likely to have a great deal of spending next year. But that is equally true of everywhere. It's simply that the US is now doing more to devalue its currency than just about everywhere else. Of course, the one place where they have been willing to allow their currency to appreciate has been China. Now, the Hang Seng was up in a dynamic manner in here today. A good part of the reason for that was because of the decision by Hutchison to start selling off some of their assets, particularly the cell towers in Spain. That's going to net them a significant, I think it's upwards of 12 billion euros. And that has helped to stabilize the share. Well, we can then think about the fact that the renminbi has been rallying really rather impressively for most of the last few weeks, and the CSI 300 is now right in the region at the upper side of its range. This has been a very orderly consolidation, and with emerging markets pretty much universally doing better, then there's the clear potential that we're going to see additional upside from the Chinese market as well. The Indian market is right in the region of its peak, and it's up in a dynamic manner as well in here today. And again, this is on a constant currency basis. If we look at that in British pounds, then the JP Morgan India Trust is well below its peak, but it is still trading at a rather significant discount of about 9.6%. When we then think about what is the defining characteristic here, well, gold does tend to rally with emerging markets, and emerging markets have pretty much been sitting it out, and that's probably over now. The MSCI Emerging Markets Index has popped on the upside. It hasn't been at a level like this in 2 years. There's a lot of broad-based interest in emerging markets for a couple of reasons. The first is growth. They obviously have higher growth rates, and in an environment where we're likely to have low interest rates interminably and a clear determination by central banks to devalue their currencies, well, foreign assets with the potential for currency market appreciation then instantly become more attractive. And of course, that exact same reason is why gold and Bitcoin and emerging markets are now starting to attract additional interest. So we have the interest rate and we have the growth rate both in their favor, but then there is also the scope that they have less debt overall. When we look at the balance sheets of the various governments in the developed world, then they are increasingly overburdened with debt. Then the demographics issue with regard to the coronavirus, it means that younger countries are more likely to get over the coronavirus faster, and that will also enhance their growth potential. So we are also all potentially at a new inflationary cycle with the global economy starting to pick up, with commodity price inflation picking up. Then with the potential that interest rates are going to be held down artificially and that we're going to have a period of debt monetization in the developed world, then The hedge is to lock down either an attractive yield or real assets that are cannot simply be printed into existence. So that's also part of the reason why gold and the emerging markets tend to do better. Of course, when we think about emerging markets, then governance is everything. And we're looking for improving standards of governance. Now, that improving standards of governance in today's world are few and far between, where we've seen the rise of populism, the rise of polarization between different parts of society, different political parties, different portions of the media. And then there is obviously the uptick in geopolitical tensions as well. So all of these are important factors that need to be taken into account. But at the other side of that equation, you have these very large young populations in emerging markets. And if restive activity and essentially revolutionary activity is to be averted, then governance has to improve in order to deliver the improving standards of living that they need in many cases demand. So that's perhaps the push factor to improve governance, and we have evidence in the emerging markets that it is in fact occurring. But the geopolitical tension between the USA and China is not likely to take a significant step lower, regardless of what form the next administration takes. That, I think, is something that will certainly be worth watching. And then when we think about the energy sector, well, if we are in a period of global reflation, it is likely we are going to see additional demand growth. But we're also likely to see additional supply growth. And I think that's one of the factors behind the weakness in here today for oil prices, even though just about all other commodities were in positive territory. Then the big question is, when will we see some of the extraordinary valuations in the renewable sector unwound? And the answer is probably not until interest rates rise. The solar sector was up in a very dynamic manner in here today. Then when we think about the wind sector, it's also rebounding and was at a new high. This is a highly interest rate sensitive sector, but there is plenty of growth behind it too. Even though it's unlikely the USA is going to sign up for a Green New Deal, the likelihood is that Europe and China will be much more engaged with a decarbonization effort because they have a clear geopolitical incentive to achieve energy independence, and most particularly because the USA already has. And that kind of geopolitical advantage is extremely difficult to replicate, but it does look like they're going to try. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.